that I'm excited to get Michael Lee's perspective on. He joins us now, NBA senior writer for The Vertical on Yahoo Sports. Michael, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm out in the Bay Area, so I can't complain.
Oh, yeah, man. It's a great time to be out there. Obviously, great basketball tonight. At least we expect great basketball tonight. Obviously, this series by itself is very interesting, but I wanted to get your take on the sort of narrative or the idea that what happens in this series affects Kevin Durant's decision-making in the future when it comes to free agency and a potential landing spot. Are you in the camp that believes that this Thunder team gets past Golden State and contends for a championship or wins a championship, that somehow keeps Kevin Durant in OKC long-term?
Yeah, I think it does, and I still think that he'll test free agency if they win the championship. I think it's something that he never got a chance to do. I mean, he's only known one perspective his entire career, and that's with the Sonic Thunder. You know, he's been with the same pretty much franchise his entire career. Obviously, moved, but he only knows one other way, and I think he'd like to see how other teams do it, at least to have conversations with people to make sure he's making the right decision for his future. I remember asking him a few years ago if the Thunder were able to win a championship, would that sort of end the discussion about where he'd go in free agency, and he said it might. So I think that's sort of where his mindset is. If he can win a championship there, then I think that would sort of make it a lot easier to stay. If they lose, I'm not sure if that will make him want to leave either. I mean, if he feels like if this goes seven games and they just come up short because of like one piece, you know, one play short, but they're right there. How many other teams out there in the league can get that close to beating Golden State in a series? So I think that if they play well, they perform well, Oklahoma City has to like his odds whether they win or lose.
What's he going to be looking for this offseason? What are going to be those things that he wants out of a franchise?
Well, I mean, wow, that's a question that really only he can answer. I know that the opportunity to win is really, you know, what he's really been motivated by for the last couple of years. Obviously, with the Thunder, they've had some misfortune with injuries with Westbrook, Ibaka, and then Durant last year. So 3 years in a row from their finals run in 2012, they've been injured. Now they're healthy for the first time in a while. So I just think he just wants to win. I know that he wants to be considered an all-time great. And he already has four scoring championships and an MVP, which will look like that to qualify him for a Hall of Fame career. But it will be tainted if he can't add a championship to that. And he's managed to not get the same level of scrutiny, say, as LeBron James, you know, who went, I believe, 8 years without a championship. And you would have thought he committed a crime the way people criticized him before he got that first one. And I think that, you know, for him now in his ninth season, I know he's feeling the internal pressure if it's not coming from outside.
Why is there such a different handling of those two athletes? I mean, obviously LeBron is widely considered to be the best player of this generation, and that makes him a bit of a one-up, I guess, on Kevin Durant. But why do we in the media, why do fans, why does everyone handle Kevin Durant so much differently? When he won his MVP, we focused on the fact that he gave so much credit to his mom, and it's always the positive story about Kevin Durant. And we're always looking for something to criticize LeBron for. Why is that?
Well, I think it's all a lot in how you carry yourself and how people view you. I think there's a perception that LeBron is arrogant and full of himself, and when you do things like the decision and you kind of make it about yourself, I think that's kind of changes perceptions of you. With Durant, he's always carried himself as being sort of a humble guy. I mean, in recent years, he hasn't really hit his criticisms. He's decided to criticize people and make some comments that let you know that he's not like some sweet, innocent child. But I think that just the perception of him being humble and simple and not a me guy, I think that sort of changed the perception, and people are more willing to root and be forgiving of him than somebody like LeBron, who anoints himself king. Once you do that, I think you sort of make yourself an easy target.
Moving on to the playoffs this season, we saw the Thunder surprise the Warriors the other day on Monday night with a 108-102 victory. Back at Golden State tonight, you said you're going to be there. Is this a must-win for Golden State, or are they the type of team that even could go down 0-2? Not that it's likely, but they could go down 0-2 and not really need to panic.
If they go down 0-2, it'd be time to panic. I think they could win a series if they're down 0-2, but I think that they would really put their backs up against the wall in a way that has never happened, and they're run together. And Steph Curry, you know, Draymond, Klay Thompson era, or whatever, however you want to dub this. I think that, you know, they have to win this game. They haven't really faced many must-win situations. But if they go down 0-2 going into Oklahoma City, which is on par with Oracle in terms of being, you know, a rowdy crowd and, you know, that kind of really intimidating environment for visitors to go, I think that that's something you got to be afraid of. I know last yesterday Draymond Green was making comments about how this is the fun part and how they really enjoy the fact that their backs are against the wall. But I'm pretty sure if you said, well, would you rather be up 1-0, you would take that option as opposed to being down 1-0. So this is a must-win for them. I think that if the Thunder goes up 2-0 going home, knowing that they'd have three of the next four games at home with an opportunity, you know, to win two, to go to the finals, with Durant and Westbrook not getting that close in a while, I think that they would go in for the close. So it's going to be fun tonight to see how the Warriors respond. I think they'll respond, you know, with a win, but if the Thunder can sneak out another one, based on the fact that they won the previous game with Durant and Westbrook going for shooting 17 for 51 combined, to go 33% from the floor, they have a chance to come out and go up 2-0, which is something I don't think anybody could have thought going into this series.
What's a bigger anomaly from Game 1, Golden State only scoring 14 points in the fourth quarter, or both Durant and Russ only shooting 33% from the field?
I'd probably go with the latter. I could see Russ or Durant having a bad game, but not both of them. I don't see both of them having bad games again because it wasn't a situation where they were just shut down defensively. They just were missing shots they normally make. The Thunder's defense since game one of their conference final series against the Spurs, it's been pretty top-notch. You know, the Spurs, I mean, we know we fell for the beautiful game with all their ball movement and passing, but they made the adjustments, and, you know, they won four of the next five games, which is really impressive considering that the Spurs won 67 games this year. So I like what they've done defensively. They got the Warriors out of their comfort zone and made them play a style that they weren't accustomed to, and they floundered with it. They committed a lot of turnovers. They played the passing lanes. They got a lot of steals, fast break opportunities on transition. So I think that we just have to see a more disciplined Warriors team because – One thing about them is that whenever they're home, they like to show out for the fans. They want to get the crowd going. They want to hit a couple threes. They want to get a dunk. They want to do something to get that crowd and get that energy going. But I think they got too caught up in being heroes and not settling what made them successful.
If you're Golden State, do you approach this game any differently or just keep doing what you're doing because it got you 73 wins in the regular season?
I think you approach it differently in the sense that you don't play the way you did in game one. I think that, you know, especially you try to go back to the way you played in the first half. I mean, in the first half, I believe the 18 of their 24 field goals were assisted, and then in the second half, only half of their field goals were assisted. So if you're trying to go one-on-one against the Thunder, then you're falling right into their hands because that's not what made the Warriors successful. You know, swinging the ball, making an extra pass, and taking smart shots is what got them going. So just don't play the way they did in the second half of game one, and they probably should come out with a win.
Michael Lee is our guest here on ESPN 700 talking NBA hoop with the NBA senior writer for The Vertical on Yahoo Sports. Last night we had the draft lottery, which ended up just being chalk. I mean, I guess Dikembe Mutombo spoiled the suspense for everybody, and then everything sort of fell the way we thought it was going to fall. Who goes off the board first about a month from now, and are we going to get any surprises on draft day when we didn't get any on lottery day?
Yeah, I was really stunned that was the first time that we had chalk on the draft lottery. I mean, nobody moved up. There was really no intrigue. It was kind of dull. It was just basically a listing of how the season ended, which made it kind of boring. I hope that there's some intrigue with this draft. I don't hear a lot of excitement and enthusiasm from execs, you know, once you get past Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. And maybe there's a Chris Dunn or a Dragon Bender, you know, who might get into the mix. But I think overall people consider this a two-man draft. But who knows if these guys are actually going to be franchise-altering players. So I think when you're Philadelphia, you really want to make sure that you draft somebody who's really going to be a part of what you're building. I think they're going to draft the best player regardless. And on paper, you know, based on reputation and everything else, it would be Ben Simmons. But I'm sure that he'll probably be doing everything in his power to try to make sure they take Ingram so he can wind up in L.A. playing with his old high school and AAU buddy, D'Angelo Russell. So if Ben Simmons doesn't go number one, it would be a bit of a surprise considering the hype he had going into the college season. But knowing what Philadelphia needs and knowing they need guys who are willing to embrace what they're building and who are willing to kind of go through some hard times in the process, then your choice might be Ingram, and that may be a surprise to some people.
Most folks seem to think that the Utes have a lottery pick coming out. They've got Jakob Poeltl, rated by some as the best true center in this draft. A lot of the mock drafts have him going to Milwaukee at number 10. What do you think of the young Austrian fella? Is that a good fit for him? Is that where he ends up?
Like I said, it would be tough for me to say where anybody goes. I think they'll, if he, you know, he's slated to go in the lottery, I'd be surprised if he slips out of the lottery, considering, you know, he's a big man with some skill. But I think overall, right now we're kind of just guessing. You know, everybody's guessing to see what's going to happen. And you don't know what's going to happen with European players coming over. And just, I think there'll be a number in the first round this year, as opposed to in the past, where we kind of rely heavily on college players. So it's just going to be interesting to see what direction teams want to go. But, I mean, considering Milwaukee could use some size, it makes a lot of sense that he would go there.
Michael, we really haven't, or actually haven't at all, talked about the Eastern Conference Finals because no one's really paying attention.
We all expect
Cleveland to roll through. Hey, can you remember a team having a better 9-game opening stretch in NBA playoff history?
Yeah, I think the New Jersey Nets swept their way into the finals back in 2003. The Lakers won 11 straight, going into 1989. And the one thing that's similar with both of those teams is that they both lost in the finals. The Lakers obviously swept their way in 2001, which to me, I thought that was the most impressive that I've seen. The way Shaq was playing, and they lost game one of the finals when Iverson took over. But that whole playoff, they were just a dominant team, and they played some really good teams along the way. Right now, what the Cavs are doing, it just sort of feels like exhibition. It doesn't. It's like the Olympic team going up against, Angola. You know, it's not really any kind of intrigue or any kind of drama. It's just they're just practicing and getting better and ready for whoever they're going to face from the West. But unfortunately, as much as the East improved, there are no super teams in the East to challenge the Cavs. And I think that's been the one thing that LeBron has had the advantage of his entire career. Since he went to Miami, he's been on the super team in a conference that has no super teams. So they should win. They should win easily. And that's what's happened. That's why he's about to make a 6th straight trip to the finals. Toronto is a good team. They got good players. But it's not a super team. They don't have mega stars on their team all lined up the way the Cavs have been built. So I think that it's just sort of unfair to expect somebody to compete when the Cavs have the most expensive roster in NBA history. And, you're going up in there and you're trying to win when this team has every advantage over you. So it's impressive they look good, but shouldn't we expect this from a team that's over $200 million?
Yeah, you probably should.
Yep.
Kyrie is obviously having a great playoff. It's not just about LeBron. In fact, you can make an argument that Kyrie's playing better than LeBron James, but how big of a deal is it that there's – they found that correct balance? I mean, who gets the credit for it?
Tyronn Lue gets a lot of credit. I think that, when they fired David Blatt midseason, people were kind of panicking and say, "Why? How did they fire guys 30-11? But the one thing was is that he was sort of let LeBron drift. It sort of was LeBron and everybody else. And Tyronn Lue started to hold LeBron accountable. He made sure that no one was drifting off on an island by themselves, that they all were in it together. And that started by calling them out and, practice, calling them out in film sessions, and then making sure that the ball moved, making sure the players trust the pass. Last year they had to depend on LeBron to kind of just dribble, 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 run out on the clock and go one-on-one because they didn't have Kyrie. They didn't have Love. Now those guys are there, so it's time to move the ball. It's time to share. It's time to get everybody else involved because, again, like I said earlier, they have a super team. They have talent. So it'd be best if you maximize everybody's skill set.
With Cleveland down 1-0, or excuse me, up 1-0, and Golden State down 1-0, who's the favorite right now? It was always Golden State, but now that they're down a little bit, is Cleveland jumped to the front? Are they the favorites for the NBA title at this point?
I think that Golden State's still the favorite. I think that Cleveland will be able to, you know, be a formidable opponent, but I could kind of sense that, you know, last round against Atlanta, I spent some time with the Cavs, and their chemistry is better than it's ever been. These guys like each other, which is something you couldn't say probably 2 months ago. But they're playing at a really high level, and they enjoy each other's company. And I think that's sort of the first step. You know, I'm not saying you have to like each other to win titles. I mean, you've had teams that have fought their way, like Shaq and Kobe. But I think that, you know, this group needed to sort of be together and sort of feel like they were in this fight with each other. And it's starting to look that way. So I don't want to say that they're title favorites because I don't feel like they've been tested in any way in the first couple of rounds. I don't feel like they've had any adversity to overcome. They haven't had to respond to anything. And sometimes that can be a good thing, but sometimes it can be a bad thing because you don't know how to handle adversity. You don't, because you've never had it. The Warriors have had it. They've played without Steph for a while. Now they've lost the game at home. You know, those are things where you kind of have to prove what you're worth. The Cavs haven't had to prove anything. I mean, it's sort of been lined up for them. Just knock out whatever in front of them, and they've done it. But I don't know. I'm not going to say they're going to win, but I think they look like a team that can compete with whoever comes out of the West, which is something you couldn't say when the playoffs started.
It would appear that the NBA has three great options for an eventual champion. Which is the best option, though, for the league? LeBron delivering that championship that he promised a long time ago to Cleveland, Golden State repeating and capping off a historic season, maybe the best season ever in the history of the NBA, or Kevin Durant and Russ getting one in OKC?
I would probably lean more towards the first two. I don't know if there's as much of a fanfare, you know, behind Durant and Russell. I think that if it happened 3 or 4 years ago when people were sort of on that bandwagon, it would have been more exciting. But now it sort of has that feel like their time has passed a bit. You know, they're trying to reclaim it. But once the Spurs and the Warriors sort of took over, you know, the league's fascination, I think everybody sort of drifted elsewhere. And I think right now fans' interests are in the Cavs, in LeBron's quest, as you said, to win with Cleveland. And also, can this Warriors team, you know, finish the task? You know, they talked about chasing the Bulls record 72 all regular season long, but they kept saying, as a caveat, if we don't win a championship, it won't matter. So the pressure's on them to win a championship to make sure what they did this year, winning 73 games, which is still mind-blowing, you know, but to win a championship to go on top of that, that would basically tell everybody this is the best season that's ever happened. And not only that, last year wasn't a fluke. And not only that, all of you people who doubted us and didn't think we were legit, we just ran through the Thunder, Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant fully healthy, and Cleveland with a fully healthy LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love. So whatever criticism you got, take them somewhere else. They don't fit here anymore.